Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, just a little bit of an observation. Over the week, I was watching a documentary on YouTube about the Police. Why are they not credited as creating New Wave? We always talk about Talking Heads, but the Police were literally prog musicians playing reggae-infused pop. That was New Wave.
Just about. I mean,
and they were doing it in the late 70s.
Aren't they doing it around the same time as Elvis and
late
Joe
70s
Jackson
they started. I checked. I listened to our review of their first album. It was 78. So they, I think, were really... Them and Talking Heads deserves a lot of credit, too, between the two.
That's true. Talking Heads is around the same time.
Yeah. They both created New Wave. Police don't get remembered, which also brings me to a conversation we had off-air last time. I was thinking about going from Gordon Lightfoot to Sabbath, just before that, Asia. Arguably, Asia is our generation, but they were really boomer rock.
Yeah.
And Gordon Lightfoot, Sabbath, certainly boomer rock.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, boomer rock is so highly regarded. It's littered with these icons.
Yeah.
You don't really hear about anyone after that being iconic except for Cobain.
Yeah, I mean, the 90s, I mean, there were big bands and stuff, but, you know.
Why weren't the Pixies legendary? Why weren't Sonic Youth legendary? Why weren't De La Soul legendary? I think among hip-hop fans, De La Soul is considered one of the greats. But Pixies, Sonic Youth, I'm sure there were bands in the 80s. R.E.M., you know?
I feel the Trailblazers from even the Boomer era, that there's a lot of them that are not even really regarded, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure there are great artists from the Boomer era who aren't lauded as geniuses. But
like
there's
a lot of the prog acts, you know, like King Crimson, for example.
But there is a glut of Boomer bands who are regarded as geniuses. And that glut dries up in 1980. And we were talking about this again off air last week. And you said it was because our generation got suspicious of anybody who got too big, which is
true.
Yeah.
We don't like successful people.
Right. So we weren't...
As Gen Xers.
We weren't pushing our icons on the people who came after us. See,
I mean, naturally, Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder should be that kind of iconic person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Them too.
Jeff tossed Buckley. It away.
Why is it? I mean, we talked about the 27 Club as well, and being the Cobain largely because he's 27 Club.
Yeah.
Same deal with Buckley, but Buckley's largely forgotten.
Yeah.
Buckley, unless you're Muse.
Just the one album, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, why wasn't he as regarded as just as much of a genius as Cobain? Arguably, I would say more so. But the conclusion I ultimately came to is, like you said, we cut down our heroes. We didn't foist them on the next generation.
Yeah. We didn't even foist them on each other.
And whereas those boomer acts were foisted on us by the previous generation.
Like, I feel Cobain actually, it's the millennials that really...
Well, they love Cobain.
Know, right, you know?
We're jaded and don't really give a shit about Nirvana. A lot of our contemporaries, I would say most of our contemporaries, worship Cobain.
Yeah, I think the we saw actually liked him more, you know.
But the boomers foisted those acts on us in the form of classic rock radio.
Oh yeah, they're still foisting it on us.
Yeah, we didn't do that to the millennials.
I think it's insane that to this day you could turn on a classic rock station, and the playlist has not changed all that much.
No. They've added some 80s stuff, which, you
and,
know, of
you know,
course makes us feel old. But
90s things in there, too, now.
But I watch a lot of reaction stuff on YouTube, music reactions.
Yeah.
There are a lot of millennials who don't know or give a shit about boomer bands.
Oh, yeah?
There are millennials who've barely heard the Beatles, let alone Zeppelin. my mind is frequently blown by what they've never heard. Like Sabbath, we're about to talk about, they've never heard.
Well, what's strange is that a lot of classic rock stations, from what I remember, like in the 90s, they wouldn't even play the Beatles anymore.
It's, well, Beatles are oldies technically now.
Well, right, yeah.
There's a line between classic and oldies. I think we broke that chain, and I don't know if the millennials will do that to Zoomers or to Alpha. We'll be foisting their heroes.
Although I still hear things from, you know, millennials and Zoomers about Beatles, so I'm not sure.
The Beatles, I mean, if anybody's going to carry through, it should be the Beatles.
I even hear a lot of Zoomers online that going that talk about boomer music being better than music now and stuff. You know? Huh. Yeah.
I've missed that.
You're lucky, because it's sad.
And there's, I mean, we'd be bag on modern pop.
Live your life, man. Live in the now.
We bag on modern pop because we're both 50-ish. But there's still a lot of great music being made now.
I was going to say, I've got fucking 6 weeks left, man.
Ish. I'm 51. You got 6 weeks till 50.
Six weeks till I'm 50.
But, you know, Annie, Punch Brothers, Grizzly Bear. There's still some great music being made.
And oh, yeah.
There's still a chance for these artists to be seen as icons. And I think Annie should be regarded as every bit as great as Zeppelin or Dylan.
I think now our problem is we don't have a tastemaker anymore, you know, of any sort. You know,
that could be the other piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
We dropped the ball. We didn't arguably or made the right decision not to foist our heroes on the next generation. And then the internet came along and democratized everything.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have traditional media cramming their heroes down their throats.
Well, think about it. Like in the 80s, we were sitting around the radio.
Yeah.
And things would be played for us, and we'd be like, well, I like this, I don't like this.
We listened to classic rock radio and Red Rolling Stone, for crying out loud.
But we all heard the same things. I mean, we'd listen to a pop station for a while, we'd listen to a classic rock station. Mm-hmm. And but now, who's listening to those terrestrial radio stations anymore? Like, how are they still even a thing is kind of how I like, they've got to have some play somewhere, but... It's definitely nowhere near what it used to be.
I watch a lot of guitar stuff on YouTube because I started off as a guitar player and part of me still wants to be. And there are a couple of very, very what were originally very inexpensive guitars that have iconic sounds. A Gibson Les Paul Jr. Was meant to be a student guitar, has an iconic sound. It only has an iconic sound because it was used on iconic classic rock albums. This cheap piece of shit guitar, essentially, that was put together for students, ended up being used on these classic and, you know, iconic albums, and this sound became known as great. And I feel like if they hadn't pushed it on us like that, I just wonder if we didn't have Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix, and all due respect to them both, and Dylan, who I always thought was as overrated as Cobain. If we didn't have all of that shoved down our throats, what would our tastes have developed into? God,
Cobain is our Dylan, isn't he?
Yeah, and they're equally overrated. And I've warmed a bit to Nirvana. I think he was a good songwriter.
Yeah.
But they did not deserve the praise that they got at the time. I think that's most of what turned me off.
I think that is it. I mean, it's good stuff, but it's not like, oh my God, this is the greatest, this should define our generation kind of thing. It was like, what?
Yeah. And
this,
you know, as I've said before, I always prefer Dylan when covered by somebody else. Same thing with Springsteen.
Henry Rollins to about Morrissey. Here's some vitamin C and a gun. Cheer up. Oh, I guess that doesn't age well, does it?
No, especially given what Morrissey has said. Smiths were a good band, too.
The gun.
Oh, well, and the Smiths. Morrissey's had some...
Although he claimed he didn't have a gun. Oh, well.
He's had some unfortunate Twitter opinions, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, on to this week's album, More Boomer Rock, from 1970, Paranoid by Black Sabbath.
That being said, let's voice some boomer rock on y'all.
And gush about it, because I know we will be.
Oh, yeah. So, I guess we'll off from the start, there's like a number of coward's ways out on this.
Before we get to that, the intro, of course, Black Sabbath were an English rock band formed in Birmingham in 1968 and often cited as pioneers of heavy metal. Paranoid is the band's second studio album. A 2017 issue of Rolling Stone ranked it number one on its list of 100 great metal albums of all time. It was the band's only album to top the UK album charts until 2013's 13. I didn't know one of their modern albums topped. I don't think I've heard anything from their newer stuff.
Yeah, I remember liking 13. That was okay. Like their last one.
I have to check it out.
I haven't listened to it in a while.
Paranoid was released on September 18th, 1970 by Vertigo in the UK and Warner Brothers in the US, produced by Roger Bain, and features Ozzy Osbourne on vocals, Tony Iommi on guitar and flute on Planet Caravan, Geezer Butler on bass guitar, Bill Ward on drums, and congas on Planet Caravan, with additional musician Tom Elam piano on Planet Caravan. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at johnscatter.com, you'll find links to Paranoid on Spotify and YouTube, so you can follow along if you'd like. Now, as you were saying, there are three possible Coward's Way Outs on this one, as I see it.
And how do you not pick one of those three, though? You
know? I actually didn't. I was close. I almost did.
Really? I view this album in a very similar way to the Talking Heads' Remain in Light, where everything is front-loaded, and then the second side, you know, kind of
my favorite
out.
On that second side. But onto the one that was almost my favorite, track one, War Pigs, Luke's Wall. Love that dramatic opening. The hard pan to the left bass bugged me at first, but it grew on me.
Like, that opening guitar note is just such a punch to the jaw, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I had my head, I didn't realize the volume on my headset when I first played it. It was just like, whoa. I mean, I've listened to this album a million times, but you know.
And then it gets to the verse, and it's such a simple, iconic riff, just two chords, two power chords, but it works perfectly. Love the lyrics. Ozzy does not get enough love as a singer.
Really? I mean,
he's an icon. He's the Prince of fucking Darkness, but he's not widely respected as a vocalist.
Oh, he's got to be up there, though. Come on. I mean, just his voice. Yeah. It's just so clean, you know? Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's approachable.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't sound, I mean, all due respect to his successor, Dio, one of the greats of all time.
Well, yeah, Dio's ridiculous, but you know.
But you hear Dio and you're like, I could never do that.
Right.
You hear Ozzy and it's approachable. It feels like it's attainable.
Like, there's power to it too, though. And there's emotion. There's just so much going on there, you know?
Also, love the instrumental pre-chorus on this one. They use instrumental breaks as, you know, choruses a lot, which I like.
Yeah.
Love that slide down during what I'm going to call is the chorus. Verse and chorus is kind of meaningless on this song.
Yeah.
But there's some great drum fills. Love the melodic solo and the bass soloing along with it.
It's like the riff is a combination of the bass and the lead at the same time.
Geezer gets his due, but I don't feel like Bill Ward does.
Mm.
He's not, you know, up there with Moon and Neil and, you know, Palmer. He should be, though.
Oh, man. Like, I think he played on that Lard album with, like, Ministry, you know, and DK. It's just...
And he's the one where I wasn't sure what he did after he left the band.
Yeah.
You know, Ozzy obviously went solo.
Ward was all over the place, if I'm not mistaken. He played everybody.
Yeah. You know, Iommi rode Sabbath into the ground. Geezer took off it eventually when they started to really suck. I recently had to listen to No Stranger. Well, not had to. I chose to listen to No Stranger to Love. Do not listen to that song. What I'm not sure about on this one and on a few tracks is that doubled lead. He puts in two lead guitars playing different solos at the same time.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how I feel about that one. It never quite worked for me. This one should feel too long, but it never does. It's almost 8 minutes.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's so filled out, though. Yeah. But, like, lyrically, It's brilliant.
Oh,
It was really hard to not pick this one as strongest, but I think,
Probably Geezer's best work as a lyricist.
just that whole Satan laughing spreads his wings line. Just it paints such a picture, like this, his work is done here, I'm fucking out of here kind of thing.
Love that riff right before the final solo. Not sure about that tape effect at the end. That was a little.
That's probably what did it for not strongest. I mean, because that's that was dated even at that point, it was cliche even then. Speeding up to the end.
On a track two, Paranoid. Not taking the coward's way on this one either.
No,
So we know
I'm
your
not.
favorite.
Yeah.
Another brilliantly simple riff. The bass is in the middle on this one, so they didn't put it on the left the whole time. Great groove. The reverb on the vocal, I think, makes it blend in a little too much.
I mean, it's like proto speed metal, though. I mean, it has a case to be the strongest here, just for that alone.
This was written in like 20 minutes because they needed a space filler.
Really? This was a space filler.
Yeah, this was the filler song because they, for whatever reason, they needed just one more song.
I
They
feel like
wrote it
there's a
in like
couple
10, 10
songs on
20
the other
minutes.
side that feel much more space fillery than this.
Only one, in my opinion, but we'll get to that. Love the bass part in the bridge. Again, not really too sure about the doubled solo. This one also works really well acoustic. I did that in some coffee houses back in the
Oh, yeah.
90s. Track three, Planet Caravan, the ballad. This is a really good spot for a slow song.
Oh, yeah. It's very jarring because Paranoid is so heavy, and this just comes in with like this crash.
That guitar part is just chilling. Love the lead bass over it. That bass tone is stunning. The panned vocal, it's a little over to the left, works perfectly this time.
I mean, it's weird because it's a, they go psychedelic here.
Very. Love the vocal melody, like all the panned percussion. That flute part is nice and subtle. You could miss it if you didn't know it was there.
Right.
Nice subtle piano again at the end, which I don't think I caught until this lesson. And this is a note I'm going to get back to in other songs. The solo is almost jazz.
Oh, yeah, they get jazzy in a few parts here.
I've often referred to Sabbath as distorted jazz.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I think they took a lot from the Beatles here. This is a lot like the song Within You, Without You, only minus the sitar.
I mean, most psychedelic took a lot from the Beatles.
That's true. That is true.
On to track four, the iconic Iron Man, your favorite?
I gotta pick this strongest. This is just, I mean, if someone asked me to play a metal hard rock song, odds are this is what I would play, you know?
That distorted vocal is iconic. Love that kick moving in from the right to the center. And that air raid guitar.
This could be the greatest riff ever written.
Yeah,
It
it's
really
just
could make a case
genius.
for that.
And the vocal and guitar matching that melody should irritate me, but it doesn't for some
Oh
reason.
no, because it's, I
It's
mean,
just such a great riff.
a and it's just, it paints the picture of the Iron Man walking along, you know? It's this mechanical, hard thing, and there's just, of course, Ozzy gives it so much emotion too.
Incidentally, the superhero predates this. He
Of
debuted in
course.
63.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was even further earlier than that, but I mean, you know more than
I
I.
just because of a Wikipedia search.
I just assumed Iron Man was like a 30s thing.
I was wondering if the superhero was named after the song because obviously they reference it in the MCU film.
This is kind of, it's more like a Frankenstein story though, right?
I've always been a little unsure about what the story is.
About his origin, I'm not sure if he's man-made or not.
In the song you're talking about.
Yes.
It sounds like he's trying to go back through time, but something goes wrong and his time travel device ends up enveloping him.
Yeah.
And he's not necessarily walking, I don't think. Yeah, I think he's just stuck there
Huh.
and trapped in this all of this metal.
Right.
Until he somehow finds a way to use it as a weapon.
Right, they said they're not sure what he is exactly, and they mistreat him, and then he takes his vengeance.
I'd love to see a movie based on this song.
That's why not? They've made movies about such stupid things. They could make a movie about this.
Love that B section riff. That's effectively the chorus. Those simultaneous guitar and bass solos are, again, practically jazz.
Someone is playing their instruments so aggressively. If you listen closely enough, you can hear them just banging onto the strings.
That's probably Geezer. He just
I was
basically
wondering.
he slapped, but with his index fingers.
In fact, it sounds like there's more than one bass line going here at the
No,
same
he's
time.
just that fast. Or
Okay.
was.
Well, no, it sounds like there's a low bass and a middle, like the rhythm guitar player is playing bass on the rhythm guitar
Well, there's
at
no
the
rhythm
same time.
guitar. It's there
It is all
was
just Geezer.
it's all just I don't think there's a second guitar track on this one. I think it's just Tony and Geezer on each side going at it. But yeah, Geezer was just that fast. Love the drum fill at the end, again, the great ending riff. And I really, again, just don't need those double leads at the end. Just irritated me. Speaking of irritation, track 5, Electric Funeral, this is my pick for weakest.
I mean, I was all right with this one. This is a bit dirt. It's weird because there's like a dirge in the middle, and then there's jazz at the same time. This is all over the place.
The opening riff is very acid rock. It kind of gives you an idea of how metal, I mean, obviously this was the birth of metal, but how metal spawned out of acid rock, a lot of what Hendrix and the Bluthier and a lot of other bands were already doing.
I mean, Iron Butterfly predated this,
Yeah,
though,
Iron
right?
Butterfly is another one. Good shout. The bass is now panned on the right. It didn't bother me that much, but again, bass should be in the middle. The melody just gets monotonous to me. The lyrics are pretty childish. I do like that change in the middle. The walking bass is very jazz. I like how low he goes on the title.
I mean, I think it's another good riff. There's so much going on with between the jazz and the dirge and lyrically, of course, it's horrific.
I think that's most of what ruins it for me is lyrics. I mean, worst on this album is not doesn't really mean much because to me it's all brilliant, but that I have to pick a bad song. Track 6, Hand of Doom. This is my pick for favorite.
I mean, I it's all right. I mean, at first I was going to pick it for weakest, but then I think there's another one that came it. Like, I think they do a lot of this well, like the hi-hat playing and I always like that. And it's kind of weird, like they mentioned Vietnam by name here, it feels like. It's
Okay, I didn't catch it. Because it's mostly about drugs.
yeah,
But they
it's
do move in and out of topics a lot. There were a lot of drugs involved in this album, even though they talk about drugs. We'll get to that on the last track. Love that opening bass, great groove. It does the quiet, loud, quiet thing. This might have been the origin of it.
I think that's what saves it for me. Why it makes it a bit more interesting that it picks itself up and then just charges again out of nowhere. It's kind of that at least makes it interesting.
And I like how when the verse comes back, it just goes down to the bass. And that timing change happens at the perfect time. Great B section riff with a great groove, great bridge
I'm not
melody.
sure if this needed to be 7 minutes, though.
But it changes up so much. There's another change for the instrumental
It
section,
is.
and then we go back to the beginning. It just takes this great journey. I think the loud part got even quieter in the last verse, or
Like
even
we,
louder in the last verse,
you
rather.
know, like we've got War Pigs at 8 minutes, and I have no complaints about that being 8 minutes. That is, great writing there. But this kind of feels like it's just, a little thrown together.
I could have flipped a coin between the two. I just didn't want to be a coward, so I picked this one. And I love how it goes out on just a solo bass. Track 7, Rat Salad. This one's an instrumental.
About time he had an instrumental.
Great riff, amazing drum fills. It's basically Sabbath's Moby Dick.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a chance for the drummer to let loose a little bit. And why not?
Love the lead bass, great lead guitar tone. Not sure about that hard panned lead guitar. I've talked about hard panning in the past. Especially when it's on the same side as the bass. Like if they're split, that's fine. This one kind of feels like a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
The drum solo is amazing. This is where I have the note about why isn't Billboard looked up to, because he's every bit as great as the stated greats. The drum sounds amazing. And finally, Jack the Stripper, Fairies Wear Boots, obviously your pick for weakest.
Yeah. This, I mean, just kind of gets lost in the shuffle here.
There are two distinct sections. The beginning, the instrumental opening is Jack the Stripper. Love the opening riff. Some great syncopated drums. Amazing bass tone. Very jazzy. And really nice opening solo. And then we get into Fairies Wear Boots. There are a few stories about where this came from.
Oh, yeah?
The story that's been disproven is that the band was attacked by a bunch of skinheads who ran away. Once the band fought back. That has been disproven. The other story is that Ozzy was attacked, or not attacked, but was basically verbally accosted because of his hair, and he was wearing boots, and he was called, you know, a homophobic explosor. And so he wrote a song, wrote it based on that. The story I'm more likely to believe is that Ozzy and Geezer were wasted out of their mind and thought they saw fairies wearing boots. Like the mythical fairies wearing boots.
I think this would have been a better ending to side one than the ending of the album, because it kind of, like, it even fades out, like, ridiculously early. It's like a minute where the fade out starts.
Love the riff and the groove, great melody. This one should, again, be too repetitive, but it isn't. Love the lead bass during the solo. The solo does get a bit noodly. I love how they go back to Jack the Stripper. Most of it is about seeing these fairies through a window, and they were wearing boots, and that's really what it's about. And then the last verse, it's about Ozzy going to the doctor and the doctor telling him he's getting high too much and it's going to ruin his life, which is what makes me believe this story about, I think they were probably tripping if they saw fairies, but
I think
it was probably just Ozzy and Geezer tripping. But I love that riff in the fade. So do you recommend it?
I would. I think it starts out, I think all the best material is really on side one, and then side two is just, meh, I mean, it's all right. But the stuff on side one is so strong. Wonder what this would have sounded like if it was, like, you know, spread out a little bit more, you know? Like if they ended with, you know, Iron Man.
I love all of it. I mean, of course I recommend it. It's the same note I had on Dark Side. If, on the off chance, you somehow have missed this album and you like rock and roll, you need to check it out. It's a masterpiece. It's iconic. And that's it for Paranoid. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing the self-titled debut and only album from Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe. I went and re-listened to the single Brother of Mine, because I could not remember it.
I don't remember that being... I swear there was a song.
It was Brother of Mine. That was the single.
Really? That was it? I could swear there was a different song, and I can't remember.
It wasn't. No. It was everything bad about 80s, yes.
Oh, yeah? And yet we're going to subject ourselves to this?
I'm hoping the rest is, you know, better. Because it's classic, yes, with Tony Levin in place of Chris Squire.
Oh, wow.
All due respect to Chris Squire. He was amazing.
How did Levin not get a credit for this?
He was an icon.
Why is it the four of them and not Levin?
Levin's a session guy.
Oh, man. No,
particularly during the 80s, he was, in 90s, he was mostly just a session guy.
Yeah.
He didn't have the, you know, reputation he has now. But I'm hoping the rest of
other guys, honestly.
I'm hoping it lives up to what the potential of the lineup. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.